So whenever we have a little blowout like that, we always sit down and say, okay, what could you have done differently? What could I have done differently? We don't place blame on the person because we always assume that we both want what's best for each other.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Healing Cassandra podcast. I'm your host, Margo Alexis. And on today's episode, I'm going to be speaking with Michelle and Andrew. They are a young neurodiverse couple. You may have seen their videos on TikTok. Today, they are going to share strategies with us and how they work together to better understand each other's strengths, communication styles, and their differences, and how they've grown to thrive in a neurodiverse relationship. Welcome, Michelle and Andrew. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the Healing Cassandra podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate the time out of your busy schedule, because that's one of the things that jumped out at me when I was prepping for the show. I said, this couple has been through a lot in a short period of time. So for our listeners, I'm going to give you the list. So they met. Andrew was diagnosed. They traveled in a van for 7 months. They had a baby. They moved to Costa Rica and bought some land. And now they're starting a wellness business and they're writing a book. And ta-da, you're getting married.
In a few weeks, yes.
Yeah, I know that's coming up. So that list would be quite a list for any couple, let alone a neurodiverse couple. So congrats. And it's ending up in a joyful wedding. So congrats to you.
Yes. Thank you. I was just going to say, we haven't officially moved to Costa Rica yet. We still have to go back to Canada and make some decisions. We may build a life in the two places. We're not too sure yet, but we did buy land here, and we will definitely be spending a significant amount of our life in Costa Rica. That's for sure.
That's great. That's great to have two places that feel like home. So let's circle around to the beginning. How did the two of you meet? And how long did you date before you became a couple?
Oh, do you want to go, Andrew, or do you want me to go?
We met on Bumble.
Yeah.
So we met on a social dating app.
She swiped right?
We both did, yeah.
Oh, great.
A lucky swipe right.
Yeah. And and then we went and played squash, and then I got the honor of being in the friend zone for a year. And yeah, it was good. We hang out every now and then, and yeah, this first year was fun.
Yeah, we were friends for a year, and it very slowly became romantic. It was a slow build. And we dated for 6 months before we realized Andrew was neurodiverse. So the first 6 months of our relationship was pretty tough in many ways, because yeah. I didn't understand certain things about Andrew, and he wasn't able to convey his feelings at all, really.
Yeah.
And talking about our future was a no-go as well. So we nearly broke up a couple times. And that's what our entire first book is about, is those struggles. Because without understanding the autism, a lot of things Andrew did really hurt my feelings.
Yes, it could be feel like it's they're so cruel sometimes because they're so direct. But how did you figure out that something wasn't quite right? Michelle, was that you that figured that out?
Yeah, there was a lot of little things about Andrew that didn't make sense to me that I was trying to figure out. My best friend really loved Andrew and wanted me to be with Andrew, but he understood my struggles. And I was always kind of talking to him like, Andrew talks as if I'm not in his future. Like, how can I be with a man that doesn't plan me into his future? And that friend said to me, I think he sees you in his future. He just doesn't know how to say it. And it kind of made me think. And I thought, well, how can that be? Like, how does that make sense? Right. And so I read a book called Shadow Syndromes, the Mild Forms of Major Mental Disorders that that Sabotage Us. And I was just reading the book to kind of learn about personality types, and I wanted to learn about myself as well. And I came across a chapter called Autistic Echoes. And it just felt like I was reading an entire chapter about Andrew. It was just like mind blown. Every paragraph, it felt like it was saying things word for word that I knew about Andrew. And then I had to approach him about it. And I'll let him take it from there. I just got to go grab the baby quick. She just woke up.
So that the book that Michelle's talking about, Shadow Syndromes, I had already skimmed it as well. And like, I'm always, I don't know, just prior to the diagnosis and all that we've been through, right? Like since the diagnosis, since Michelle brought it up, like I've learned a lot. So I still have to kind of like take myself back to, you know, like just young or not just Andrew, you know, pre-diagnosis Andrew. So I've been trying to like, you know, learn more about myself for years. In my 20s and early 30s, it's like there's always this kind of mystery or just things are different. And so she brought it up and she showed me the book and told me about that chapter. And then I looked at it and thought to myself, that makes sense. Yeah, let's like, I trust Michelle and I know that, you know, she's bringing it up, you know, for us in a very positive way. And I wasn't, I wasn't opposed really in any way. Like I'm curious too. And I,
That's great that you were curious. So you were open to get a diagnosis.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like if that's possible and however that would be. And that was another fun, you know, adventure. So yeah.
So after Andrew, you got the diagnosis, how, and you found out that you were on the spectrum, how did that affect your identity?
Oh, yeah, like a lot. It's a tough one to unpack. So the best way I could kind of describe it is like, you know, it's like once you get the diagnosis, like that's not the finish line. Right. Because then if you start to think about it, then you start to like overlay your new information with like, you know, your history, like a lot of your history, and you start to rejig how you think about things. So like it probably took about 2 years or so, like say from like the buildup of like reorganizing your identity. And then kind of coming down to like a manageable level. Because it was pretty daily, you know, you'd reminisce and your mind would be just thinking and you're imagining and you're fantasizing. And then you would get used to having this new overlay. And then you start to really realize a lot of things. And then you'd have to, you know, figure that out. And it's a lot to unpack for a couple of years, but it's, yeah, it's good. It's still, I'll be honest, you never really finish. It's just, it just gets like back, kind of like back to normal or bearable or anyways.
The first 6 months after the diagnosis, Andrew was extremely overwhelmed and he ended up leaving his job. And one of the reasons we lived in the van was because we knew that if we wanted to be together and have children, we needed a lot of time to learn about each other. And Andrew needed time to learn about himself because he had gone his whole life not knowing, which I can only imagine what a struggle that is. And he had some friends in his life that weren't necessarily good for him. And he was kind of learning his blind spots in those areas.
That's so, a huge one to have like Michelle there, have somebody that you trust and that you care about. And, just yeah, to help show you your blind spots, because well, those are touchy areas, but it's like so much growth and awesomeness too. Right? But it's really touchy, and there's a lot of tough.
So we decided we were going to do a 2-year backpacking trip around the world to learn about each other and meditate and do lots of wellness courses and things like that. And then COVID happened. So that's that's why we ended up living in the van in Canada, is because we couldn't go anywhere. And we had packed up our house and planned this big adventure, which living in the van was a big adventure, just not in the way that we planned.
So I was going to ask you, a lot of couples have difficulties traveling together, and you were just new to the fairly new to the relationship, correct? How many years have you been together now?
When we started traveling, we've been together for 2 years?
No, not even. We met in April 17, 2017, and we began dating in April of 2018. So when we traveled, we had been together just about two years. Yeah.
I never thought that it would be, I was pretty good. I was pretty certain that Michelle would be a good travel partner, but I do like, it's such a strange phenomenon. Like, cause like at work, man, when you talk to people, you just, that's where you really get this litmus test of like, why do I feel so different than other people? Cause people would say like, wow, you went backpacking with your girlfriend for 5 days. I couldn't do that. And then a part of me is like, why? And then you kind of learn why. And you're like, well, the answer to that is you shouldn't be with them, I think. Like, so it was, so a part of me isn't under this duress of like, oh God, what if Michelle and I don't get, I was like, oh, Michelle's great. Why wouldn't we get along? Everything should be fine.
Oh, it was an adjustment. Living in a van was most definitely an adjustment. And we really had to refine our communication and our routine, because we learned that I like time alone in the morning. So I get up an hour before Andrew, and I wouldn't want him to get out of bed until I had kind of got ready and brushed my teeth and stuff. Cause you only have room in the van for one person to be up moving around.
Funny how it works, but it's like, you can make it work.
It was definitely a learning curve, but the fact that we were friends for a year before we dated really helped us.
Yeah.
And we both just decided that if we were going to commit to this relationship, we were going to go all in before having children and spend a year together really learning about ourselves. And Andrew spent most of the time living in the van, fixing the van. But when he wasn't doing that, he was meditating and reading and journaling quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good.
Yeah. And he's really come a long way since his diagnosis and his awareness around people and social situations, because you can't really fix your blind spots when you don't know what they are. Right. So the diagnosis really helped him realize what they were.
So did Andrew have the diagnosis before you went traveling together in the van, right? So you already did. Okay.
Yeah, probably six to 8 months, I think.
Yeah.
So how did you handle the day-to-day, the decision-making when you travel? There's a lot of decisions that have to be made. One of you take the lead?
That's funny. I think in some contexts, there are lots of decisions to be made. But I think Michelle and I are fairly laid back. Like I found that there's a certain magic to traveling, but you have to kind of like be okay with letting go of the wheel a little bit and then not squeezing too hard. And then it's like you can allow serendipity to happen, but then you don't let it get too chaotic. So like, I don't know. I don't think we have.
We're very go with the flow. For the most part, we spent quite a bit of our time parked in the mountains, just in beautiful spots. Andrew just loved fixing the van and installing gadgets, and he got a diesel heater and everything. And I would just film him.
So much fun.
And
so much fun.
But it gave you it was a great experience to really get to know one another. I mean, a lot of it sounds like a lot of it was one-on-one without the influence of friends and family, jobs, the outside world, so that you had time to be fully present with each other and learn about each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we joke all the time that every couple should be doing that the year they get married, instead of a wedding and a ring, just take the time to go be alone together somewhere if you can, because it's so important. Like by the time we had Faith, our daughter, I feel like we had a really strong foundation for understanding each other's needs and routines. And now that we've thrown a baby in the mix, of course we still struggle. Everyone does, but we can handle it a lot better. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. It feels that way.
Yeah. Traveling is really important. I have a nephew that traveled with his girlfriend. They traveled around the world. They took 2 years. They saved up and they took 2 years. And now they're getting married. We're going to be heading to Spain in a couple months for them to get married. But they learned so much about each other and they had to depend on each other. And that's very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And living in a van, just even if you were by yourself, living in a van really will make you more easygoing. Me and Andrew had to do a border run to Panama in January because we can only be in Costa Rica 90 days right now. So we had to leave for a few days and we ended up booking just the absolute worst hotel room we could have.
It was a party hotel for, you know, it's, yeah, there was base during the building. Our ceiling was too short in one part of it. So like
we couldn't stand up.
Tilt your head. You can't stand up straight.
My goodness.
And We just, it was an awesome stay.
Like we looked at the, you know, at like the internet ad and it's like, it looks good, Michelle.
It looked like it had a lot of pictures of yoga and stuff and the yoga kept being canceled and it was like just a big party house and we have a baby.
And the terrible. Island itself was a party island and we've been told like, oh, you'll love it there. You'll love it there. And then our friends, we were told like, or we learned afterwards that the people who told us that you love it there, they've never been there.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. It sounds like it was an adventure. And those are the things that, well, may not feel so fun at the time, but they definitely make memories and give you something to talk about. I just have to say for our listeners that Michelle's sitting here with the most gorgeous baby on her lap, beautiful eyes. Her name is Faith, right?
Yes.
And how old is Faith?
She just turned one a few days ago. Just
One years old. Oh, she's beautiful. Beautiful. So I'd like to talk a little bit about your relationship. So you had to learn about each other's communication style, which I imagine is very different. So how was that a struggle at the beginning? And, you know, can you tell us about that and how far you've come to where you're at today, what you've learned from each other?
It's all you.
It's all me.
Why? It's all Michelle.
Hey, everything's great. What's wrong?
Oh no, we you know what? I can give a perfect. So we're still learning. We've definitely come a long way. I will give you a few hints that we've learned. Our entire second book is going to be about communication because that's how many issues and bumps we've had and how many little tweaks we've done.
Yeah.
But one thing that I've learned this month is. I tried to give Andrew a picture mentally of how our wedding's going to go. And I was kind of trying to, because I know Andrew can't really anticipate how things are going to go down, right? He lives so much in the moment that he doesn't really understand what's coming. So I thought I was helping. And I tried to tell him, you know, the next few weeks are going to go like this and it's going to be like this and there's going to be a lot of people here and it's going to be, and I was trying to make it better and all I did was overwhelm him and make it much, much worse.
It's funny because as I'm sitting there listening to it, like, I don't know how to convey, like, I like what you're doing and I appreciate your care, but you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know how to say that. It's just a feeling, and like maybe it's me, maybe it's you, maybe like I don't know, but it's like right now I don't feel like I just want you to hold me, just say like simple things that won't cause my mind to try to understand, to try to visualize, to try, you know, like I don't like you're triggering the troubleshooting part of my mind. Because it's like, because I'm visualizing, adding to it. And
so I was trying to prepare him for how the wedding's going to be. And I just put him in an overwhelmed state and didn't prepare him at all. So we ended up having a big conversation a couple of days later. We gave him a couple of days to decompress and process. And then he said, you know, just say less words. Just tell me less.
Interesting.
And Yeah, and I'm learning to explain things in a simpler form because I'm a little bit of an oversharer because I love it when people can kind of tell me how things are going to go and what an environment's going to be like because it helps me prepare emotionally. But Andrew's not like that. He doesn't need to hear that.
Interesting. And I did hear you say, Michelle, that Andrew looks at life through a magnifying glass, through a different lens. Can you explain what you meant by that and how that's different from your approach to life?
Telescope, microscope.
Microscope. Yeah. So
I don't have a broad view. Oh, a lot of people, it's almost like you're looking at a high definition picture, but it's broad, right? It's lots. And they just feel it like almost in a superficial way. But for me, it's on something particular and then come out, go back in. Like, so it's almost like you're looking through. I'm miming a telescope right now for the listeners.
Yeah. So So the way I look at it is one of the things that really helped me with the autism in the very beginning stages was learning that Andrew sees the world in pieces. So he sees things as individual parts. So if I'm standing in a room full of 10 people, me, Michelle, I can notice all 10 people and probably their mood, right? Like I can kind of notice that guy might be a little grumpy. These three are happy to be here. And those two are excited to leave. Or, you know, I can perceive kind of everyone's state to a certain degree. Whereas Andrew would be standing in the same room and he would fixate on one thing, whether that's the air quality in the room or the temperature or one person that he might have had an interaction with that he didn't quite understand. And he's perceiving that one thing at a deeper level.
I have a good metaphor.
Like a magnifying glass, whereas I'm looking at the whole thing in less detail.
I kind of have a metaphor I think that might help out. I love metaphors. And I think they, so, you know, when you're on Google Earth and then you look at the world and then you start zooming in, I think a lot of people will like look at the whole Earth or like look at the whole, like the macro aspect of what's happening and be able to like do their logic, their thinking, their feeling from that perspective. For me, that feels weird to me to be able to be so zoomed out and then still be able to like take in a lot of info. I'm really used to like zooming in and then looking and then zooming out, like kind of something like that. So it's great for troubleshooting detail work and certain things, but it's terrible for interpersonal relationships. Dear God.
And large events.
Yeah. Like I'm just sitting there like, just like, it's almost like you're in the rain, but you're just like, yeah, it's raining. Yeah. Whereas someone might say like, oh, like they might know what it means. And I'm just like, oh, it's raining.
But Michelle, too, I think about, you know, when you explained that, when you go into a room and you're looking at everybody's moods and that, it sounds like you're a highly sensitive person and an empath. And that can be difficult as well. Sometimes I wish I was more like my husband, who is like Andrew, who can just look at one thing. It feels overwhelming when you're picking up the vibes of all of these people and, you know, trying not to take all of their energy in and stay neutral.
Yeah, that's why I often joke that I try and just hone in on Andrew when I'm overwhelmed because he balances me, because he feels more neutral. It's very hard to perceive Andrew's mood. And that was one thing that really confused me about him when I met him. I was like, I can't tell if this guy has a crush on me. I can't tell what he's thinking.
I've been told that by a few women in my life. Like, I can't read you. And I'm like, okay, cool. I think that's me. Like, I don't really know what to do with that information other than just like, look at it like I'm at a zoo. Just like, oh, a tiger. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is refreshing. You must know if your husband is neurodivergent, because for me, I have enough moods and Andrew kind of has like three only. You know, he's either normal, which I mean, I don't love the word normal, but normal Andrew, right? He's either just pretty neutral or he's really, really, really excited or he's really overwhelmed and his brain isn't working. He kind of only has three states, whereas I have about 20, which can be exhausting. So it's nice to be around Andrew in that sense. And the longer I'm with him, the more improvements I'm making on being able to block other people's moods.
Cool. That's fun.
So how was it for the two of you to navigate since, you know, a lot of the NT women do have a lot of moods and they can change on a dime? And for the partner who tends to be very consistent and sometimes stoic, they get confused. So how do you navigate that?
I have to really use my words. Like, I say things like to Andrew that you would think would be obvious. Like, hey, Andrew, I just got home from the worst day at work ever, and I had a lot of presentations. So maybe don't keep talking about whatever geek thing you keep trying to talk about, because I'm overwhelmed.
I'm so glad you do that. You don't know. I'm so happy.
And it felt really weird at first, but the more I do it, the easier it's getting. But I really have to spell it out for him. And, you know, some women joke that they don't want to have to do that with their husband. Like, I don't want to spell it out for him. But I'm like, when I do spell it out for him, he hears me and life is just so much better. So why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah, that's true. A lot of women do get upset because they say, well, he should just know. He should just know. He should. Well, that's not going to happen because you're in a neurodivergent relationship or marriage. So that's part of it, is that, no, they don't know. So you have to spell it out. And also, you know, you have to set boundaries. How have you maneuvered setting boundaries with each other?
Good question.
We haven't struggled too much in that area. I mean,
I've learned something. I've definitely learned about Michelle. So I have these, like, I don't know if this kind of works with what we're talking about. Faith's hilarious.
Faith is,
but I have kind of like,
the baby's blowing bubbles.
Like, I kind of have like basic rules or like if then statements, right? Like, if Michelle, you know, seems or does X, I should do, right? Like, if then I should do, if I notice this, I should. And that's just kind of from learning it, but it like, that's from me learning it just over time in a really basic way, right? It's not like an intuitive thing. It's like just learn by doing over time.
Yeah, we vocalize our needs very well.
That could be well.
I'm really overwhelmed right now. I need a movie night and I need you not to talk to me. And I'm not mad. I'm just, I need some time to myself. And I always have to tell Andrew that it's not you. I'm not mad. Because if I start being quiet and don't want to be around him, it can be really, really hard on him. But if I take 5 minutes to say, hey, I'm, and it's funny because when we first started dating, I wouldn't think that I would have to do this because to me, it's so obvious. It's like, hey, Andrew, we have a new baby and we just moved across the country. Like, of course I need time to myself. It's not about you. But Andrew needs to hear the words, and it really helps him to hear the words. Yeah. Andrew, it's not about you. I'm just tired. I can't give you attention right now. I'm depleted. We vocalize where we're at emotionally.
Yeah,
that would be our boundaries, I guess, is just really making sure we stay on top of that.
So that's a good piece of advice for our listeners, that you use your voice. You ask for what you need at the time and you put it out there. And Andrew, you've learned that, okay, this is what she's asking for. I'm going to give it to her. So that communication is very direct.
I don't know if I've learned to do that. It's just like Michelle said this. Perfect. Like, now I like you know, just, I don't know. Like, it's just, if she says something to me, it makes sense.
One thing we're learning, though, we had another issue this month. This is kind of what we do. We just talk about our recent issues because they're
that's
the fresh.
Good.
We had a little bit of a blowout. We had a little bit of a confrontation because I am finishing the book. The book is now handed in, but I was finishing the book just a few weeks ago. And I only get to work on it when Faith is sleeping. And Andrew knows that that's my time to write. And I don't want you to talk to me when I'm writing, when the baby's sleeping. But we realized that if I am in the living room on my computer, Andrew will forget and just go to talk to me. And it didn't matter how many times we talked about it, it was an issue. So we came to the conclusion that I needed to be somewhere out of sight during that time, because if he sees me, his brain automatically wants to talk to me. So we realized that, oh, and sometimes I would look at him there too, right? Yeah. Like sometimes I would look at him and engage.
I totally do what you're saying, but then that gets multiplied because sometimes Michelle maybe is at like a moment of relax. Like I just pounded out, you know, like a paragraph or two and then she'll look at me just to kind of like look away from the computer. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up? How's it going? Right. Like, cause I don't know.
You let him in, Michelle, just a little inch, and he takes a
mile. Yeah, and with Andrew's black and white thinking, it's either all in or all out, right? So if I engage for a little bit, so
I don't know what degree you're allowing me kind of in.
Yeah. So whenever we have a little blowout like that, we always sit down and say, okay, what could you have done differently? What could I have done differently? We don't place blame on the person because we always assume that we both want what's best for each other. And then I kind of made a joke and said, well, I guess I just can't be in there. And then Andrew's like, yep. Yes, go well, somewhere else.
That like makes the most logical sense, because then those, I just won't be able to talk to you because the door's closed. And then you won't be able to have those moments where you kind of look at me and I'm like, hey, what's up? Oh, not much, Andrew. Oh, well, speaking. And then like 5 minutes later, Michelle's like, okay, Andrew, I need to get back to my work. And I'm like, sorry, what happened just now?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. His mind kind of resets too. So if it's not the same every day, it gets confusing. So yeah, we're just constantly learning. And when we come to a conclusion, we write it down and we try to make a point to revisit that. We haven't been doing this lately, but when we were in Canada, we would revisit it every week. Okay, did we do this? How did we do? And we would try and do a weekly check-in just to assess where our needs are.
Try to. It's, even if you do it bad, it's still great.
Yeah.
That's so big.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're constantly learning, but we're both really good at not fighting mean, right? We try to say like, I am having an issue because I am feeling like you are needing too much attention and I am not getting my work done. And Andrew will say, well, if I'm in walking through the living room and you're there, I want to talk to you. And we just kind of look at the situation rather than place blame, because at the end of the day, our minds work differently and he's not going to just know what I need. He can't tell when I'm in the mood to work. Like Andrew can't tell. So the best thing
I
to
should
do,
be able to, what is
well,
it?
I, yeah, like,
do you turn green? Like, is that a thing? I mean, like, I can try to imagine what that looks like. She stares at the computer like it's a real big part of her future. But I don't know if I'll, like, so then every time you look at the computer, I'm like, oh, is she in the mood to write? Oh, is she in the mood to write? And it's like, seems that 64% of the time I'm wrong. Maybe that statement's not correct. I don't know. Okay, now you see why I'd rather just. Yeah.
It's hard for you to make that association. And I think it's really great, though. And I think what you said is key, that you stop and that you talk about it. You don't let all these things pile up, this miscommunication, because then that just leads to a lot of resentment and the pile gets higher and higher. So, like you said, it may not always be perfect, you know, finding the time to meet and that. But I think it's so important when you're in a relationship where the communication style is so different that it's a learning process. And like you said, it's ongoing. It is a process. A lot of NT women complain about the lack of reciprocity in their relationship. Michelle, do you want to speak to that?
Yes, I do. I struggled with that in the beginning, but I haven't struggled since I've understood the autism. One thing that I've learned with Andrew is that I have to give a metric to what I want. So I don't know if this will work with all men. Obviously, they need to hear you and want to give you what you want. But if I tell Andrew, like, I want to cuddle more, or I feel like you're not giving me enough attention.
Oh, the open-ended.
He doesn't know what to do with that. Like, he doesn't understand.
Yeah. Too open-ended.
I, like, I try to put it in some kind of a context that isn't extreme. Like, so we cuddle now, we cuddle later.
Right. So if I tell him for 1 hour every night after dinner, I want your attention, just me and you. And if we keep it the same, Andrew will always give it to me.
Hmm.
But if I just say, like, you've been spending too much time on the truck, you're not in the house enough, I'm feeling lonely.
Oh, God,
like,
that feels just
like he'll just get sad and not really know what to do.
Yeah,
his,
like, what is that
his mean? Mind won't connect. Oh, Michelle needs more attention, so I should give her more attention. He just feels I'm failing and I don't know what to do about it. So is that a fair?
Oh, no, that's great. But then there's still a part of my mind that's like, how are you supposed to know? Like, how, like, I honestly feel like I'm playing a game where it's like, so why is there cheating? Or like, why does this game not feel fair? Like, how, yeah, it's like, Andrew, you spend too much time on this, you're doing that. It's like, what context is this said within? What's happening right now?
So to the biggest thing I would say to those women is to find something that you need from your partner that is maybe small, even if it's 15 minutes. And give them specifics, like for 15 minutes when you get home from work, I want you to hold me on the couch and let's not talk about work. Or for 15 minutes before bed, no phones, no TVs, let's just connect. Or whatever it is that you want, right? But you have to give not only a metric, a time of day, and you have to put it in your routine.
So repeating it over and over, it's not just one time. And then the next time you change it up to try and be consistent in one of the areas, either the time of day and then the ask.
Yes. And consistency, because if you're getting one-on-one attention from your partner every single day, even if it's in a small way, you could start feeling like your needs are met, right? And then you could potentially add something else, like maybe once a week we eat dinner together, or once a week, and pick a day, like every Sunday, or and write it down.
I hear a lot of women, they say, and again, they get caught up in, you know, well, I shouldn't have to ask. And when I ask and he does it, it feels like it's forced, like he's just going through a task. How do you feel about that?
I'll let Andrew answer that.
It's not. I don't like, I mean, if it does feel that way, then it does feel that way. But like, this is tricky because to me, it's like, it's just not like, oh, it's 8. Let's cuddle. And then you can do that. I mean, or it happens naturally, or like, let's talk, like, or it happens naturally, but it's almost, I don't know. God, it's like you want to go to level 6 or level 1. Or some, I mean, I'm just using that like a general metaphor.
Yeah.
Like you, I don't know how you would stop from feeling a certain way if it elicits that feeling in you.
Yeah.
Like other than like, I don't feel that way. Let's try that for 5 minutes. And then if it still feels weird, we reconvene. And then maybe 5 minutes, it's like, oh yeah, this is cuddling. Or like, oh yeah, this is talking without it being, I don't know. I'm just trying to troubleshoot right now, I guess.
This is one of the reasons we're writing our books is because I really want to change the way we look at romance. Because I think that all the movies we watch and everything we've watched growing up is an absolute lie. When it comes down to it, it's not important why he's doing it. If he's doing it because it makes you happy and he's showing up. I mean, it's different if he's in a bad mood when he's doing it. That's an entirely different thing. But Andrew wants to give me what I want.
Yeah, like I'm happy to, it's like, oh, like it's 8 or whatever. This is our predetermined time or, you know, whatever. I'm kind of excited in a way, right? So maybe that shines through. I'd like, and then you allow it to shine. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a tough one. But I went months when we were first dating saying to him, like, I'm not getting enough attention. I'm not getting enough feelings. Like, I don't know how you feel about me. And Andrew didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to say. And now I know that if Andrew gets excited about a project, he'll ignore me for 5 days and he won't even know that it's been 5 days and not ignore me completely. But you know what I mean? He'll be hyper focused.
That's what my time is. And no one's telling me that, like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, turns out everyone else is happy too, including me. Wow. What a great world.
He'll be hyper focused on something, a project for a week. And I have to tell him, I have not seen you in 7 days and you have to take a day off from that project and spend it with me. And he'll go, okay, we'll do that tomorrow.
So Andrew, what's your special interest?
Oh, just, it's funny, like my profession, I really do enjoy it, but like right now we're like more writers, I guess, or we're just like influencers within this niche or something like that. But like, I really enjoy like working with my hands, being a mechanic, just problem solving with inanimate objects.
That's
like,
awesome.
Like fixing things.
I was joking with a friend here, just like, you know, I really enjoy it when I go up to a machine and I'm like, hey machine, like what's wrong with you? And then you just gotta like, you know, work on it a bit and it doesn't lie to you. Or like, it's just like, I'm broken and then you fix it and then it works and you're like, this is great. And then when I struggled with relationships or with friendships or even with like diplomacy between like impartial parties, oh God, it's so draining, exhausting, and I don't want to do it and it's terrible. But then the opposite is true, where like, for instance, the truck that I work on, the truck that we own in Canada, I've done a lot of work to it. It's not a new truck at all. But whenever I look at it, I can feel all the work I've done. I love the feeling that I have, that I know what its story is. I can feel its story. I can deconstruct the engine in my mind and be happy that I know that I have iridium spark plugs and that maybe one day I'll have to do the fuel injectors, but I can see them and I know what's wrong with them. And I don't know. So I'm kind of giving an ultra detailed version, but like one of my big hobbies is mechanics. And I also just losing myself in a video game here and there. When I was younger, I would play a lot. I could probably go into a long diatribe about like that relative to autism, but.
But you also mentioned, Andrew, that you do meditation, and I'd heard that you did was it 10 days?
Yeah, Vipassana, so like a 10-day silent meditation. Yeah, like since probably 2010 or so, or sometime around 2010, when I started to learn about meditation, I've always been interested in it because it's not a part of our culture, but it seems really good. At its core, you are not your thoughts. And intellectually, that can make sense. In practice, if it's not a part of your culture and you haven't been at least kind of involved with that concept, it's really foreign. It doesn't make sense. And so yeah, like going down that rabbit hole for the last decade or so, it's really helped me to understand myself and, you know, to help maybe with just dealing with life. I think it's more of a general thing too. Like it just helps you to just accept and to not take things too seriously. And
good. Michelle, I just wanted to circle back to the reciprocity. And I thought what you said about our experience with women's experience with romance. I owned a bridal salon for 10 years. So talk about women's expectations of, you know, what the wedding and dreaming of the dress for their entire lives and that. But one of the things with reciprocity is gift giving. And I hear from women, they hate when Valentine's Day comes up and birthdays come up and it becomes very stressful. How do you and Andrew handle gift giving?
That would be stressful.
We don't do gifts, really. My very first birthday when I was dating Andrew, he didn't get me anything. I was disappointed. We went out dancing downtown in Calgary and he just treated it like every other day. And I was very disappointed in him. And I didn't know about the autism and we hadn't been dating long. Our first anniversary, I told him I wanted to exchange gifts on our 6-month anniversary. And Andrew bought me a mug and he threw it in my lap. When he got in the car, he just threw it in my lap and said, happy anniversary, chucked it at me. And then the whole rest of the day felt like every other day. And I was disappointed again. And this is the large premise of our first book, is me saying that I'm embarrassed that I was disappointed in him because Andrew treats me pretty fantastic all the time. And I would rather have a guy that treats me pretty fantastic every day who doesn't do those special moments than a guy who's great at the special moments and isn't treating me fantastic the other days of the week.
That's so great perspective.
Yeah. And that's really what our entire book series is trying to convey to the world is, hey, listen, all these things that we think are super important, like a major wedding and romantic Valentine's Day, like if you truly feel loved by your partner every day, and that doesn't mean every day is perfect by any means. It just means, do you feel loved, heard, and understood? Do you need some gift that he doesn't know you want? Mm-hmm. Because society tells you it's a holiday and he should get you one. Like, how important is that? I know Andrew feels like he's acting when he tries to be romantic and he doesn't like it. He just wants to be himself.
Yeah, rather.
How has having a child affected the relationship and how about your parenting styles?
So I knew having a baby that was nonverbal would be tough on Andrew. I had many women write me on social media and warn me about having a baby with a neurodivergent man and how tough it could be. But I purposely put us in a situation where I didn't have to work the first year Faith was with us. And now that she's one and she's starting to communicate with him a little bit, I'm just watching him slowly become a better and a better father. And that's not to say he hasn't always been a good father. He has been. But when she would be unhappy, he would have to come to me to, he's like, what's going on? What does she need? He couldn't figure it out, right? Because he can't really read her cues. And he would kind of have one thing he would do when she cried, like he would put a soother in her mouth. And Faith isn't big on soothers. And the neighbor showed him that one day, like, oh, if she's crying, just put the soother in her mouth. And I had to tell him, like, okay, that could be one thing, or it could be this, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this. And what we learned is that when the baby starts crying, his brain kind of panics and he'll forget those things. Like those things that come naturally to most of us women. And I'm sure it's probably like this for most men, not just neurodivergent men. His brain panics when the baby cries and he doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, the baby's always safe, right? I've never been worried about her in any way, but Andrew could quickly almost be in a panic state with the baby crying. So we learned that I needed to write a list and put it on the wall by her change table so that if she was panicking, it can remind him, like, put her in the stroller, take her for a walk. Is she hungry? Is she this? Is she that? And that really helped him because he's like, yeah, when I'm panicking, like I didn't think to put her in the stroller. And I'm like, Andrew, every time she cries really bad, like the stroller usually calms her down. We just take her for a long walk. And he's like, I didn't think of it, like just in that moment. So we learned that having lists really helped. Yeah, Faith is only one. So we're kind of still learning about this whole parenting style thing. But we are both very much in agreement that we want our kids to be whoever they want to be. We don't place expectations on them. And we think that the best way to model for kids is just through our actions. So when we do have disagreements, we don't move away from Faith. We let her stay in the room. Obviously, she's one. But even when she's 3, 4, and 5, we're going to let her stay in the room because we don't fight mean. We communicate what we need. I was upset when you did this. And I think that our children should see that. And I think that that's a healthy thing to do. But I'm just getting happier and happier every week because Faith is learning to kind of point for what she wants. And Andrew even told me a few days ago, he said, I'm really starting to enjoy Faith more than ever. Because she can ask him, right? But I know the second she is verbal, Andrew is going to be super dad on steroids. As soon as she can say, Dad, show me this, or I want to go here. But I knew that him being able to read her needs before she talked would be a struggle. And it has been. But I just had him make up for it by helping with the dishes more and doing other things around the house. Because if the baby was having a fussy week or getting a tooth, I would just tell him, I need you to do the dishes every night before bed. Like, I need to wake up to a clean kitchen. And it took him a little while to get in the routine. But once he got in the routine, now before bed, he just does the dishes, like little things like that. So that if I always had the baby, he was picking up slack.
It sounds like you do a lot of writing in communicating with Andrew, and that seems to work in your relationship.
We've learned the hard way a few times that writing things down is key because Andrew is visual and he thinks in pictures. So if we make a list and he can glance at it or refer to it, it really helps him because he seems to forget certain conversations, or he won't remember that that conversation applies in this situation. So if we write it down and we both say, this is what we're working on, and we have to put it very simply and in few words, right? Just like do the dishes before bed. Very simple, very easy. And for weeks I had been asking him to help me more with the dishes and he didn't. And then as soon as we actually made a plan and a time, he started doing it. And I was like, oh my God, I wish we thought of this 2 months ago. Like, just.
I know they like the writing. When I met my husband, so I've been married almost 27 years and didn't know that he was on the spectrum until just a few years ago. But I remember early on when we were dating, and he's an engineer, he made up on the computer these little notepads that he called AVO, avoid verbal orders, and they were for writing lists. So I look back now, it all makes sense that he was asking me to write things down because it was easier for him to see it in black and white and then follow the task rather than I tend to embellish and get creative with all my language and that, and a couple words in, he's lost.
Yeah, embellishing does not go over well. And I think as women, we embellish quite a bit because we enjoy it, right?
Yes.
We like talking with a lot of flair and personality, but for our men to understand us, it's not good.
We like to talk story and they don't like that. So no. I wanted to ask you, Michelle, what do you do? So through Healing Cassandra, I have a lot of women that have been married for a long time and they didn't know that their husbands were on the spectrum. So they've spent years without communication with their husband, reciprocity. So there's a lot of bitterness and resentment that's built up. And many of them have found that they have, many health challenges, and that being in a neurodiverse relationship has taken a toll on their health. So self-care is really important because all marriages are difficult, but being in a neurodiverse marriage has its special challenges. What do you do for your self-care and how do you avoid burnout?
Oh, I don't always avoid burnout. but that's usually my own doing because I set big goals and I try and do too much at once. But yoga, walks, and meditation would be the three big ones, and just knowing when you need to take a day. Because when you just start to get stressed out, if you take a day then, it normally only takes like a day to decompress. But if you put yourself into full burnout mode and you go 5 or 6 days past when you should have taken a break, then it might take you 3 or 4 days to recover. And yes. So I'm getting better and not doing that as often. I used to kind of have a burnout every few months or so. And now it's maybe once every 6 months that I do that to myself. And asking for help when you need it. And it's not always your partner that can give it to you, right? Maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it's a friend. But I definitely have gotten better at telling Andrew when I need a night. And sometimes I want a night with him. Like sometimes I'm like, Andrew, can we just watch a movie and not talk? And we actually did that a few nights ago for the first time in a while because we've been so focused on the book.
So when is the book coming out?
A few months. Yes, yeah, we're going to be doing the pre-sale pretty soon. We just have some beta readers on it right now. And then we have to cut some words out of the story because it's a little bit too long right now. So we're going to tally up everyone's vote with what to take out of the book. And then the editor is going to do the last round of editing. It's exciting.
It is exciting. What what's the title of the book?
Friendship, Love, Autism.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Yeah. That's great. And you have a wedding coming up. And did I hear right that viewers or your followers can watch the wedding on TikTok? You have a great TikTok.
Yeah, live stream the whole wedding on TikTok.
Yeah.
Great. So they can follow you on TikTok at
Michelle and Andrew.
Oh, Michelle and Andrew. Okay, yeah. Great. And you have
two accounts. Our large account is Michelle and Andrew. Andrew has an account, Andrew and Michelle 2.0. We'll be live streaming it on both accounts.
Okay, great. Well, we're at the top of the hour. I really appreciate you taking the time. I really admire you as a couple that you've gone through a lot of change and you continue to learn about each other and are open to learning about each other, open to trying new ways to communicate. And I think you're such a great inspiration for other neurodivergent couples, and we'll be looking forward to reading the book.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And if you want to find out more about Healing Cassandra, head on over to our website at healingcassandra.com. We also have information about our membership community. You don't have to travel this journey alone. Find out more about how you can be part of a thriving community of women. That's at healingcassandra.com. See you next time.